us right now? And he was like, yes.
Hello, this is Pearland Podcast. I am really happy today. I'm in LA and I got Damien Ellis, who's sitting beside me. We will have a conversation today. Tell the audience who you are, since most of the audience may not be from the art world.
Yes, I was born in England and I'm an English painter, and I moved to America to come to university in 1980. And I've started working painting soon after university and have made several different series of paintings. The most recent one is a series of paintings that describe artist studios, my favorite artists, and that's the one that seems to have taken off.
What is interesting about you is, Damien, you are self-taught. When you went to university, you went to Harvard, right?
That's correct.
And then you were studying script writing, if I remember.
That's right.
How could script writing turn into an artist? You're supposedly a writer.
Yes.
And a writer doing an artist, being an artist. I mean, this is very fascinating transformation.
Well, first of all, so when I went to got into Harvard, it was because of my mathematics. And so they put me immediately into an economics course with very high-level economics. I just, you know, it just wasn't for me, and I began reading a lot of literature, and I began playwriting and storytelling. I really fell in love with storytelling, and I think that that's what I'm still doing. Some historians are out there writing, and I'm expressing it all in paintings.
So while you were doing your script writing, I mean, this is also creative. Whatever you do is, you must be very excited about it because you like to learn.
I love learning. That is absolutely, I love reading. I love learning. But I will say that, you know, my playwriting professor at the end of 4 years at Harvard, he said, I have a gift for you. And he gave me Matisse's palette knife that had been given to him by Alice B. Toklas.
Wow. So he was encouraging you to paint.
Yes, well, I was a bit shocked. I said, so you don't like my playwriting? And he said, I'm not saying I don't like your playwriting. I love your storytelling, Damien, but I'm just saying that, you know, that it's good to experiment as well, and it's not beyond the realm of possibility because your father and grandfather were painters. And I said, well, thank you, but put it away.
So, I mean, As you mentioned just now, your father and your grandfather, they're painters, they're artists. Why did you try to escape from this profession? Because I know if your parents are and are painters and artists, you don't want to be compared to them.
That's right.
It's really tough if you have a very successful family, one of them being a great artist.
Yes. I think it was very tough for my father, and I saw that. I witnessed that because his father, my grandfather, Simon, was a famous painter in England. He was the royal portrait painter. And I'm told that the royal family liked his paintings above all. There was their favorite portraits. And then my father didn't go to art school. And I remember that his father was always saying to him, you should have gone to the Slade, you should have gone to this art school. Then they both died when I was 14 and left.
Both died at the same time.
And left me all of their equipment and their easels and their palettes and their brushes and their paints. And I was so sad about my father's death that I just put it all away in storage and I locked it away and didn't want to be a painter after that.
Do you think that at that time, you know, you did recognize you have the gift?
Yes, I kind of knew that because actually my father had come to me a couple of years earlier and said that he was trying to organize a show at the Royal Academy of three generations of Elwes artists, and could I do a painting for that show? It never really happened, but yes, I'd always known that I could draw and paint.
After university, you must feel that you have to do something. And so at that point, that you take take all the risk and then push yourself to become an artist? Tell us about what is going on.
Yes, well, the only kind of legitimate job that I ever had was working on a film. And so I went to New York, and my stepfather was a filmmaker. So I had grown up with filmmaking as well, which is storytelling, and grown up around film studios, which were, had huge lots of medieval castles and Western towns. And so I love storytelling. I love playing. I love that kind of thing. So anyway, on the set of that film, at that point, I had told my stepfather that, you know, I was really interested in writing and perhaps writing films and maybe one day directing films. So I worked on that film, and it was terribly boring because they they gave me a walkie-talkie and said, okay, you're in charge of crowd control and keep people away from the film. So I never saw the film being actually shot. I was just keeping people away. And one day, I was keeping a crowd in the subway station. When I let them out, there was Keith Haring drawing on black posters with white chalk. And all I said to him was, your job looks more fun than mine. And he said, well, can you paint? And I said, no, not really. He said, can you draw? And I said, yes, I can. He said, well, that's all I'm doing, so pick up some chalk and help me. Anyway, we became really good friends. And we talked about painting and poets, our favorite artists. And he recognized in me that there was a painter. And he said to me at the end of one of our evening together, he said, listen, Damien, you know, next time I see you, I'm not going to talk to you unless you've done a painting. Because I know that once you've done one painting, you'll be hooked like I was, and you'll keep on painting the rest of your life. And he was right.
So when did you make your first painting?
So that was a week after of seeing Keith. He had said to me, I said, well, I can't paint. He said, well, go across the street, see that hardware store, buy six cans of spray paint, different colors, find an empty wall, as you can see, they're everywhere in the city. And when you draw with spray painting, you suddenly have a painting. And I said, okay, well, that sounds really fun. I will do it. Then I saw him a few days later, and I hadn't done a painting, and again he was saying the same thing. And then I was very lucky because the film director I was working for, suddenly his building, he was moving from one office to another, and there was an empty building. I had the keys to it, and it wasn't going to be demolished for a year, so that became my studio in New York. That's where I did my first painting.
Were you excited? How did you feel when you after you did your first painting? Share with us.
Well, I passed out because I hadn't put a mask on and I hadn't opened the windows. I didn't know about ventilation while you're spray painting. And so I passed out and I woke up and I blew my nose as hard as I could into my sleeve and spirals of colored plastic came out of my nose. And I thought, oh my God, I've killed myself on my first day of painting. But I looked around and I saw Venice, Italy on one wall and the skyline of New York on another wall and my friends from Harvard on another wall. And I realized, my God, I did all of this. I do love painting. And it was from my subconscious. And I was hooked after that. And I filled that building full of paintings, even on the roof. I covered the
roof.
I covered the whole roof in paintings as well. So you could go up above from another building and look down and see these gigantic paintings.
Okay, so you paint, but yes. How do you sell? Because does it make a living? Because if you just, you know, paint on the wall, how do you make a living?
I must be the luckiest artist in the world because within 6 months, I had the top dealer on Cork Street in Robert Fraser came to New York to find graffiti artists, and somebody, I think Keith, told him, you know, there's an English graffiti artist on West 56th Street. And he said, well, that can't be. That's why I've come here. There's no graffiti in London. Nobody's doing graffiti. And he said, well, go and have a look. And he was incredulous, but he came and he loved the paintings. And I ended up being represented by him and advised by him, which is so important to find a dealer like you or Robert, somebody who's able to give such great advice. I love it.
And then when was your first show with him then?
Well, that wasn't to be. He offered me a show on Cork Street, and it was going to be in 6 months. And I said, listen, Robert, I don't just want to paint graffiti. I don't feel like I'm authentically a graffiti artist. And maybe, you know, Andy Warhol said, you'll only be famous for 15 minutes in the future. I don't want to be famous as a graffiti artist. So I'm going to go to Paris and learn to paint with a brush. And he said, well, how are you going to do that? I said, well, I don't know. He said, well, what you should do is apprentice yourself to an artist, a painter that you like. You can be cleaning their palettes and preparing the paint in the morning, yeah, and you'll learn, and you'll see them painting. You'll be desperate to paint after a while. And so I went to Paris with that idea, realized I didn't know anyone in Paris, let alone painters. And so quickly I was, after a few days there, I suddenly had a brainwave that what I would do is go and find every artist studio that I could in Paris, knock on the door, ask the artist, can I make a drawing of your studio or a painting? And they would open the door with a chain and go, who are you? I don't know you. And I was like, well, you know, I've heard that your studio is really cool. And they'd say, okay, if you sit really quietly in the corner, don't disturb me, don't say a word, you can stay the day. And for 2 years, I visited maybe 100 different contemporary studios.
And seeing how they painted.
And watched them painting. So I learned how, like that. Yes, that's how I learned to paint, and with a brush. And unfortunately, in that period, unfortunately, Robert Fraser died of AIDS.
Oh.
And it still gives me shivers. Wow. I mean, yes.
And then that year, okay, you went to Paris. Okay, yeah. Obviously your family has money.
Yeah.
You went to Paris.
Yeah.
But
that is
the money that your family gave you.
No.
So how do you make
my
the
family,
money to go?
After New York, after the abandoned building, I came back to London to see Robert, and I started painting. We had a big house, so my family had a big house in the country. But they were very unhappy that I was painting. They expected me to do other things. You know, my stepfather said, look, you can go to law school, but I'm not sending you to art school. And so I was painting away, and I thought, okay, what I've got to do is, Robert did sell a few paintings, but I did a little tiny show of just my etchings, of some etchings that I made. And I sold about 3,000 pounds of etchings, and that was the money I used to go to Paris.
And then in Paris 1 year, 100 artists, how do you make the money? Selling your painting on the street like these artists?
Well, it's funny that you should say that. It's funny that you should say that because I actually, for a while, I painted on the bridges in Paris. I painted the Pont Neuf.
I'm not surprised because I know several Chinese artists did.
And people would come along and throw money at me, you know. But that's not how I know. It's the £3,000 in those days did last. Yeah, lasted for about a year. My family did, you know, they cut me off financially, which was a great thing, actually, because
they cut you off financially,
yeah,
because they didn't want you to become an artist.
Correct.
To be an artist, you have to know hunger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And then it pushed you to go forward.
I think it's a great thing anyway. You know, I think, you know, if you rely on your parents' money, it's much more difficult. But if you go out and do something for yourself, of course, it gets better and better.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so when did you meet your wife?
I met Luann. I was doing an exhibition here in Los Angeles.
So, okay.
Yes.
So after Paris, you
yes.
stayed there exactly 1 year.
No, 2 years. 2 years.
So you must be fluent in French, right?
Fluent in French. And I can't, well, they never let me speak when I was in the theater, so it wasn't difficult. I didn't learn very well French, but I could get by.
So your £3,000 lasts
yes.
you 1 year.
Yes.
Your next year.
No, well.
Were you selling
yes,
the?
Yes, I was.
And,
I was
and
always
the
there. I've always been very lucky, and people have always wanted to buy my paintings. That's all I can say. Even then, the little watercolors and drawings that I was making, people would buy
right.
them from me. Yeah,
so you never got worried, and your family could not swayed you
yes.
to do as they say proper job.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
So after 2 years you decided to not to return to UK but to go to
I
not
came,
even New York, to go to LA. Why in LA?
Well, L.A., I had, you know, as I said, I grew up in the film business. And so at one point, my stepfather had made a film called Equus, and it was being nominated, or Richard Burton was nominated for an Academy Award. My stepfather didn't want to go, so he sent me with my mother to accompany my mother. I think I was about 16. And we came to the Academy Awards. It was the 50th Academy Awards, and we went to all the parties. Now, all the parties in those days was only three parties, and so the other days of the week was nothing. So I realized after Paris, that's where I could do a show. I could come to Los Angeles and do a pop-up show just before the Academy Awards. And sure enough, it worked. And it was full of movie stars. And all the movie stars bought my paintings. And that's how
Hold
I started.
Hold on, you mean 16 years old, you have this memory.
Yes.
And then you still... So you still understand the market? Wow, you have a lot of balls just to go.
I did.
Yeah, I did. That's very brave.
I did, and then the next year I did it again, and the show got even bigger and even
so
more.
So you just went to LA.
Yeah.
And then rented a
little space, an artist studio, and did a pop-up show in an artist studio.
And next to
the first one was in Venice. The next one was in Venice.
But how do you invite everybody? Your stepfather helped you to invite him.
He certainly had some connections, yes. And my brother, both of my brothers were also in the film business, so they had lots of connections.
And they are
as
supportive
well.
of you.
They helped me, and they gave me telephone numbers and addresses of people to invite.
At least part of your family supporting you
absolutely.
To become an artist.
Yeah. No, my stepfather ended up loving my paintings, and and yeah, he was
so And so when you call up these people, they did not say forget about it. So you mentioned you are the stepson of your father, the brother of...
Yes.
And they all came and support you?
They all came. I couldn't even believe... And more, not even their friends. Bruce Willis and Demi Moore suddenly came in and bought seven paintings from one of the shows. They came to the next show and bought more. And it was like that. It was just... The word spread... And since my paintings were out there in all of these movie star houses, everybody else saw them and wanted to get them as well. So it was very fortuitous.
So financially, you were very successful then.
Yes, it was okay.
Were you? Was it a little... Because, you know, artists should suffer. How come you never
no,
suffer?
No, I did.
Your suffering is nothing compared to...
It's never...
You never suffer.
My wife, Luann, so I met her on the third time I was doing the Academy Award show. By then it was in a gallery. A gallery had invited me to do it on West Hollywood. And Luann was 22 years old and working in the next door gallery to me. And I invited her and she came along and I had to watch. It was so successful, that show, that the press was asking me questions, can I pose with Rob Lowe and whatever. And so I had to watch out of the corner of my eye as some billionaire, I call him in a joke, was chatting her up and trying to take her off to dinner. But yes, that's when I fell mad in love with Luann. She's always been so supportive of my work and she's so intelligent and she comes into my studio every day and her taste is impeccable. She can go, you know, those two colors are not quite working with that other color there and whatever. And she's right. And she knows her stuff. She really does. She
but
loves
you
art.
Two are very compatible.
We're very compatible.
Because you two actually support each other.
That's right.
I mean,
yeah,
I think your
I'm
artist
very
career
lucky.
On your and after you met her is actually built together.
Totally.
Okay,
totally.
So your story is really very special. You really have the courage to actually go to a foreign place. You never lived in LA before.
Right.
And you know how to get people to come to you, which is pretty amazing. Because to have them to visit for your show, which is a big deal already.
Yes.
And then to have it so successful. So you actually, come on, Damien, you never suffered.
No, but you know, so I was going to say, Luann and I call it feast or famine. So, you know, we have a show and it's the feast and it goes on and on. And then there's always
money runs out, exactly. It's okay. That's what you know. You're young.
Yeah, exactly.
You're young. You have to be. You know.
Exactly.
And then tell me your life in Colombia. And but, you have your children there as well, right?
Well, first of all, we moved there because there had been an earthquake here. There had been the riots here. There was
an earthquake in LA.
And the house that I was renting from Malcolm McLaren, the guy who'd started all those Sex Pistols and punk rock and everything, had the beam was completely cracked. And I said, I called him and he was in Paris. And I said, Malcolm, I'm sorry, but the beam is cracked. He was like, no, it's always been that way. And I said, no, let me show you the chimney. It's also cracked. Anyway, it was time to leave. And I said to Luann, you know, I bought this piece of property in the rainforest for virtually nothing.
Why did and you I, buy a property in a rainforest?
Well, I loved the rainforest, and I loved, I had been backpacking when I was 18 years old across South America before I went to college, and fell in love with South America. And I, when I went back there to visit, that's another whole story, but an art dealer from New York sent me to live in his house in his palace in Cartagena. And while I was there, I visited this very, very, the rainforest, very remote place in southern Colombia, and fell in love again with that place. And somebody persuaded me to buy a piece of land. It was so inexpensive at that point. And so I bought 20 acres there and started building a house. And so when I was with Luann in Los Angeles and the beam was cracked and the house was unlivable, and so I brought her to Colombia. I went down there 2 weeks before her and cleaned up because nobody had ever lived in the house. And so there was just masses of insects and taken over. And so I cleaned it all up and got it all ready. And she came down, she fell in love with it immediately because it's, in those days, there were virtually no cars. It was all just horses. It was like the Wild West. And so you tied up on a hitching post outside your house or outside any of the shops in the little town. And she is a rider, so she loved riding every day. She fell mad in love with it. And she came back, and we lived there for 6 years.
6 years?
Yes.
And
I started to make these huge paintings, and when we were there, huge installations, joining all the paintings together. That's when it first started to become a little bit conceptual. And I would recommend to any artist, young artist who is struggling or starting out, or to go to a country where they can afford to, because it was so inexpensive. We could live down there like kings on about $15,000 a year. And we did. And then once a year, we would go and do an exhibition in London or Los Angeles or New York and make far more than $15,000. So we were living really, really well. We were billionarios down there.
Oh, wow.
In pesos.
So, and obviously you guys are fluent in Spanish.
We're fluent in Spanish, absolutely.
So even before you arrived,
we learned it when we were down there. But I have to say that it's so remote that the indigenous people who live there, they only have a vocabulary of about 250 words. So it's very easy. It's very easy to learn.
And you get along with them.
And we get along really well. And Luann is so great with all the people and helping people with their children who are sick or ill. She'll give them medicine and nutritional advice and that kind of thing. And she became very popular.
So you're both children.
Yes.
They were born there, or they grew up there?
First child grew up her first 3 years there. And our second child, Luann, was pregnant with him when in 2000 we had to leave. It became a little bit dangerous.
Really?
I got taken off by the FARC to meet the head of the FARC in the middle of the rainforest.
Why? How come?
I got a letter one day just saying, we know who you are, we know you're a good person. I had stumbled on, I think I was painting different rainforests, and I had a couple of times I had been painting one time in the rainforest, and I suddenly noticed that all of the roots of the trees were full of leaves and there were no other leaves. Somebody had gathered them and put them in between the roots. And so I asked the indigenous person who was my guide, and he said, oh, it's the FARC. And I said, is the FARC looking at us right now? And he was like, yes. I said, okay, you know what? The painting's finished. Let's roll it up. Let's go. And this happened again. I went into another cloud forest. I painted a huge painting on top of a volcano on a cloud forest up there. And again, there were Kfar people in near there. And that's why I think I got the letter. To cut a long story short, I told Luan, who of course was very fearful with a little baby and nobody to talk to. I told her, don't worry, you know me. I will either escape. If I can't escape, I will, when I meet the leader of the FARC, I will make best friends with him and you'll let me go. And I tried the escape thing. I didn't really try the escape thing, but I did quickly have a gun to my head at one point. So I thought I was being kidnapped for a very long time. But actually, when I met the leader, I did exactly as planned, and I made best friends with him just by opening up a very intellectual conversation with him about communism and life and what was going to happen in Colombia, you know, when he took over and all of this. And by the end of it, he was hugging me and saying, you really understand me, and I'd like to come visit you. I have friends who I visit every couple of weeks, and you're a great guy, and I'm going to make sure nobody harms you at all and everything. And I said, thank you very much. That's great, and shook hands. And then when I got home to Luan, I said, it's time to leave. It is time to leave. This guy's going to visit us every few weeks, and you know it's going to be more dangerous for us. So we left and came to Los Angeles and had our second child here, and continued.
When you arrive back here, I mean, your contact basically is 6 years old. It's 6 years ago.
Yes.
So you have to rework again.
Yes. But as I said, you know, I sold so many paintings to so many important people here in Los Angeles that it was just constantly, there were more and more people who saw them in those houses and wanted them.
When did you start the studio series?
I started the studio series. So I had been painting, you know, drawing studios back in Paris years ago. When I came back to Los Angeles, I didn't know what to paint. And we were living in a little apartment. Luan was having the second child, our boy Aubrey. And we had Cosimo already, who was 3 years old. And so we had a little apartment on the promenade, near the promenade, on 3rd Street in Santa Monica. And the living room had to double as a studio. If we had a client over, we had to pretend the whole place was a studio, clean it all up, make it all white, and, you know, and it worked somehow. But I began, Pierce Brosnan's wife called me. They already had several paintings. Pierce loved my paintings, and he had several paintings. She called me and said, listen, Pierce, you know, has just got this James Bond film. It's his birthday coming up. I would love to get him another one of your paintings. What are you doing right now? And I said, well, I've just made this painting of an artist's studio, so I think I'm really interested in resuming painting artist studios. And she said, okay, well, is there anything from, you know, the South Seas? Because I'm from Hawaii. I said, well, I can do Gauguin studio for you.
Ooh.
And so that was the first painting that I made, was of Gauguin studio. And I made a couple for her to choose from. She took them both. And shortly after that, Annette Bening got a Monet studio. So I was off and running. But how did that happen was that I bought a computer when we first arrived back, because we didn't have computers. The internet had only been invented. And the first thing that I Googled was Picasso's Bateau Lavoisier studio. Because when I went to Paris, when I had gone to Paris years before, the first place I went the first day was Picasso's Bateau Lavoisier studio in Montmartre, only to find out that, yes, there's lots of tourists, but there's nothing to see, really, because that place was burned down in the 70s and they built a new building. And so I then Googled. My first thing I ever Googled was Picasso's Bateau Lavoisier studio, and nine little fragments of photographs came up. And even a little map showing that Picasso was living next door to Modigliani, and all of it was so exciting. And so I began to try and put it together, what his studio looked like. Could I make it? And I couldn't understand it. And then after a while of drawing from the little photographs, and some of them were just fragments of photographs, I suddenly noticed the hand of a demoiselle in one side of one photograph. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at all the other photographs, and there was the arm of the opposite demoiselle in another photograph. So I printed out Demoiselle d'Avignon, and suddenly I could make a jigsaw puzzle of all the photographs and see what his studio looked like. probably for the first time since he worked there in 1907, you know. So it was incredible, you know, the realization.
You're like a detective.
Like a detective. I could now realize not only could I paint Picasso's Battle of Lovers studio right then, but I could do that with any artist, any of my favorite artists at any time that I wanted to be a fly on the wall and see into their studio.
So how did you do the Gauguin studio?
That's the most, the further back in time you go is the most challenging.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So, yeah, that's the 19th century.
Yeah.
There's one photograph of from within one of his studios. Now, he had about six different studios in Tahiti. There was one photograph of the inside. There was the existing photograph, his last studio is existing there. And then there's all his paintings and his drawings and all of that. So I put all of that together. I even went to all of the different Sotheby's catalogs to find everything that people, when he died, sailors looted his studios and took all of the, now all of those things have cropped up years later and they appear in Sotheby's and Christie's catalogs. And so all of his possessions I got and all of that I managed to put it together. But of course I had to use a lot of my imagination as well. Yeah, and to put it together.
Then with your creative mind, you put things together. Also, when you do a studio, you study about the artist.
Yes, absolutely.
You study how, and you know, of course you study each of their series and how they paint and the Gauguin, how he looked at these native women. I mean, all that must be...
Everything. Every interview they ever had.
Yeah,
every
must be so inspiring.
Every film that was ever made about them, every book that was written about them, every person who wrote an account of visiting that studio, that's so useful, you know.
So each of these paintings must have taken you a lot of time because I can see that beside you, you really paint the details.
Yes.
Is that research effort?
Yes.
Of studying the artist, not just studying the artist of how they paint, but their life experience.
Absolutely.
The studio activities.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm very much looking at their studio activities, and of course, as you said, the imagination, of course, has to come into it, particularly if you go back far. But even with every studio, because you know, you see a. Let's say Lucian Freud's studio and you see his palette on a table with lots and lots of paints. But then you see also he has two chairs by his painting and one chair is covered in paint. So, of course, the palette was there sometimes. So you can move things around because in a real studio, everything's moving all over the place all the time.
It has to be.
And you figure out as an artist, where would that be? Where would that?
Every studio I love the most is the floor.
Yes.
Because the paint that's spilled on the floor, that's the most beautiful part.
Me too. I love that. Yeah. I learned and Lucian Freud would, after he finished with the palette, he would take his palette knife, and there's a little film of him doing this, and pick the paint off and then splatter it against one particular wall. So that wall is covered in paint of his platter. Yeah.
So who's your favorite artist studio so far?
Yes, that's so hard because I love
them all. I know you've done your Three Walls, Picasso painting.
Yes.
That was amazing.
That was Picasso's villa in Cannes in 1956. And there's literally hundreds and hundreds of artworks in that studio that he's completed or he's working on. It's April 1956. I'm trying to get you to imagine that you're arriving at the front door of his and coming into his villa, and it's the three ground floor rooms that he was using as studios, and you see them and you can literally walk around inside them and examine all of these things. What was so exciting about that one for me was that in the actual painting studio, I was just painting the painting studio and all of these beautiful objects. And I realized at some point during it that I was painting his studio in 1956, but he was fully focused on Velasquez's studio in Las Meninas in 1656, 300 years before that. And probably no coincidence that it was 300 years. And he was actually placing everything in the studio to represent different bits of Velasquez painting. The princess was this painting that he did. The chamberlain in the doorway was a painting of the shadow that he put particularly in the studio. He thought his studio resembled that studio in Las Meninas that Velasquez was painting in. And so he was focused on that. And then I went back to the Las Meninas painting and saw that Velasquez at that time on the walls of the studio were two big paintings of the ancient arts.
Yeah.
So Velasquez was painting on the ancient arts. Picasso was focusing on him. I was focusing on Picasso. And that's what my paintings are about. They're about how ideas go from one artist to another and inspire different generation to different generation. And so that nobody knows that. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows
that Picasso was doing that.
Because it is, you actually show a different historical perspective. Because I think if you study a history of an artist or their biography, they will talk about their biography instead of so specific.
That's right.
That you went to a studio, you look at a studio, and then you realize that he was actually inspired by another artist.
Yes.
And I think these are the valuable.
Yes.
This is really
it's a visual valuable. History. Yeah, I'm telling a visual history, and it's always surprising to me the things that I learn. And I think that as an artist, I'm seeing things that obviously a writer would not see. Yeah.
And I remember when we were talking about the Basquiat studio, you were you did different Basquiat studio, but in different angles. Right?
Yes, that's right.
But when you see from different angles, how in your mind you must have already painted the whole studio in the 3D form.
So just going back to Picasso for a second. So for that gigantic painting with all of that thing, I had to assemble all of the photographs that could possibly be found. And luckily, Picasso had two or three favorite photographers, friends who are photographers. One of them was called David Douglas Duncan, and he's put out six or seven books on Picasso. And so I took all, photocopied everything and put all of his photographs all over the walls and all of the other photographs. And there was a documentary team that made a movie, a documentary of me making the painting in the early stages. And they called me and said, listen, we can't put it on TV because you've got all these photographs by David Douglas Duncan and you have to get his permission if we're allowed to release the documentary. So I called David Douglas Duncan and he was in his 90s, I think he was like 96, not sure exactly, but he was, and I said to him, you know, I explained to him the situation and he said, no way. And I said,
why?
But David, you know, the thing is this, I could not have done this painting without you. You are the link. And that's what all my paintings are about how one artist inspires the next and the next artist inspires the next and next. And so without you, I could not possibly have done this. And he said, oh, all right, you can do it. But coming back to Basquiat, somebody had seen a portrait that I did of Basquiat, and they contacted me and said, I was Basquiat's assistant at that time when he was living on Crosby Street, and I made all the frames for him, a man called Stephen Torton. And I said, and he said, could I come and make a frame for your portrait of Basquiat? And I said, of course, please do come, Stephen. And so he came all the way from New York and he helped me make a frame for the Basquiat painting. And so I got to ask him questions. And of course I asked him, so where on Crosby Street was it? And, you know, it says it's on the top floor. And he said, no, it's on the second floor. He gave me the address. And I went there to see a lot of different studios in New York, but I went to that one first. And I just rang the bell. And a woman answered, and I said, excuse me, my name is Damien Elwes. I'm a painter, and you're living in Basquiat's studio. And before I could finish, she said, no, I'm not. And Basquiat's studio is on the top floor. And I said, no, that's what they're advertising in Airbnb, but actually you're living in Basquiat's studio. And she said, well, what can I do for you? And I said, well, you can look me up on the internet and make sure that I'm legitimate, and I've painted, and I've done a drawing of Basquiat's studio already. And she said, no, would you like to come and see it? And I was like, I would love to come upstairs and take a couple of photographs. So she let me come upstairs. Amazing thing was that her little daughter, who was only 3 years old, was painting in the exact spot where Basquiat did his major paintings, because that was where the best light was coming through the window right there.
Wonderful.
And so then when I went back home and we had the lockdown, I was wondering, okay, how am I going to gather all the information? And this woman called Patty Astor, who was an art dealer, who showed Basquiat and Keith Haring back in the early 80s, had contacted me and said, I love your paintings, you know. And I said, well, can you answer a few questions about, you know, you obviously went to the Crosby Street loft. And so she did. She gave me, you know, she answered some questions. And she said, not only that, if you come onto my Facebook page, you'll find all the people who, you know, went to his loft back in that time.
Wow.
And so I did that during lockdown. There was nothing else going on. And I got their telephone numbers and called them all and asked them, what were the videos, what was on TV when you were in there, what music was playing, what albums did you see lying around, what books did you see lying around, what art was he collecting, what everything. Just, and so I was able to just completely fill these gigantic paintings of the studio with everything that they told me.
Do you work like this on every single artist? Or there's several of those that you are favorite and then you will...
Well, you know, I do work like that on every single artist as much as I can, but I really relate to Haring and Basquiat because they were exact same age as me. I got to meet them, so I got to talk to them about making art, and we lived in the same era, and so we grew up on the same comic books and the same cartoons, you know, and so many of those things in there, both of their studios, the art materials, and were things that I was using at exactly that time as well. So they're the ones that I relate to even more strongly than well, as much as the others. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what is in your mind now? How are you? I feel that, Damien, you never really plan something. It's just that things come to you.
Yes.
And it's all organic.
Well, I'm constantly reading and researching and listening to, all the time that I'm painting, I have YouTube on and I'm listening to Peter Doig talking or whichever artist I'm interested in at that moment. And so I'm constantly researching the next studios that are coming up. And I always have a list of paintings that are fully researched. I may have done a little drawing or a gouache, but I haven't done a painting yet. And so my mind is full of, I'm always thinking about all of those paintings that are coming up and how I'm going to do them. So right now I have in my mind Miro's sculpture studio in Majorca. I have Picasso's sculpture studio in Mujan. Those two are both incredible studios that I haven't
painted. Have you visited Modigliani?
So he had I really want to paint Modigliani's studio. I love his work. And he had a little studio in Paris. I've been there. And there's very little information. There's not, you know, the windows. I can't see what the windows are. But there's just enough to make a painting, yes. And I will. So I will do that, absolutely.
Okay, so... You've been doing studios and studios.
Yes.
I mean, beside painting, what do you do? What's your hobby?
My family.
Yeah,
my family with my children and my wife. That's about all the time I have. And people think that I'm so social because I was very social growing up in England, and they see me at my exhibitions, and it's full of all of these people, and so they think that I am constantly out with all of these people. It's not like
but
that.
But you cannot, because you can see from your painting the details.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. I wish I could make more paintings per year. That's my own year. I see my other artist friends putting out a painting every other day, and I wish I was in that, you know, I wish I could do that, but that's not the way this works. There is a lot of research to it, and I enjoy that. But I do look forward to moments of that haven't happened in the last few years, of just kind of going on holiday to Italy and just painting a painting every day of different thing, you know.
Nice.
I would like to do that. I would really like to paint Venice, Italy very much.
Last question
yes.
to ask you is,
yes.
would you allow other artists to paint your studio?
Well, I have been sent by fans paintings that they've done of my studio.
Oh, how wonderful. And?
Yes.
And?
I prefer painting my own studio. That's why, so people always ask, when are you going to paint your own? Of course I have painted my own studio. I just haven't put them out there as much. But that's why I was so happy to send you that one for Hong Kong, because that's such a personal painting, and it has Luan with the babies.
We put it right in the front.
Yeah, and it has all the a lot of the paintings that I was doing at that time of my first baby, my first child, Luan with the baby, and all of that. It's all in there, and
yes,
so it tells a story.
I saw Luan pregnant as well.
That's right, that's right, yeah.
Thank you, Damien.
Thank you.
What a wonderful an hour that's been.
Oh, goodness, I can't remember. It went so quickly.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. And listen, I didn't get to ask you questions. There are a few things I wanted to ask you.
Yeah?
Okay. Yes, so who are your favorite artists, Western artists, let's say, and or also female artists, I'd like to know.
I love Pollock. I love Jackson Pollock a lot.
He's coming up for your show.
Yeah,
by the way.
I love Jackson Pollock. And I also, female artists alive, I love Joan Mitchell.
I love Joan Mitchell.
Yeah, I love Joan.
Okay, great idea.
These are the two I really love, of
Me
course.
Too.
And of course, I do like Modiani, and I love Basquiat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was so good. Yeah.